Hi there. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your journey today. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio. This release is a rewind from our archives.
What happened was I was a frustrated filmmaker in Hollywood. I had worked for top producers and ended up doing development, what's called doing development, looking for projects. And then I kind of went off on my own and started to try to package my own projects. And that's when I started investigating various things. I got in connection with one of my the people that I would later interview, some people, this is before Camelot. I got in touch with Dan Sherman, who later became one of my witnesses, who wrote a book called Above Black, which I got in touch with his screenwriter, and we were going to try to shop that around. In fact, we did shop it around to try to get a movie made. It's a fascinating story, and if you've never seen my interview with Dan Sherman, I highly recommend it. So that was one of my clients, and the other person was Wingmakers, James of the Wingmakers, the creator of the what's called Wingmakers.com, which is a multimedia kind of cult website that's been around for many, many years now that has a story about a scientist from Black Projects that went on the run. And it's called the Ancient Arrow Project. And it's a fascinating story and contains a lot of very interesting ET and metaphysical details that people can learn from. And it's expanded into a number of other websites at this point as well. So I'm one of the few people to ever interview the creator, James, from the Wingmakers. In his case, he would not go on even audio. We just did a written interview, but that's available on my website as well, if you just search for Wingmakers. So I guess to get back to the subject, I ended up trying to package and sell these movie projects to people like James Cameron, his story person, and Ridley Scott, Kathleen Kennedy, who used to work with Spielberg, and he produces many of her own movies these days, and people like that. And basically was not able to get any traction, not because I didn't have great projects, but because Hollywood is something of a closed game, especially if you don't have what they call a track record. And I was not associated with any name producers or name stars at that time. So I got frustrated. I picked up a consumer grade camcorder, and I was very interested. I had been writing sci-fi scripts on the side, just on my own, and working at a JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, as a contractor a couple years prior to this. And so I decided to go out and start interviewing the people that spoke at UFO conferences and see if I could make a documentary. So that's how I got started into Camelot. One of the people that I decided to interview at that time was Bill Ryan, who became my partner in Camelot. And he was my partner for about 3 years, and I've been now doing this for 11 years. So it's a long, long time. As they say, the rest is history, because Bill and I partnered up. He was a webmaster and a writer. I was a filmmaker and a writer, and we just started deciding to get the truth out and interview whistleblowers from above top secret around the world. And that's exactly what we did. And so here we are 11 years later.
Now, I've heard many things about the secret space program, and I'm not going to lie. When I first heard about it, I thought this is not real. But the second thing that came to mind was Star Trek. I mean, this sounds something straight out of Star Trek. Now, recently, I know that Dr. Sella wrote a book on the secret space program. I think that's due to release in March, I believe. He says that this faction is, in fact, a naval operation. So first, let me ask you, how did you actually get wind that a program like this was in existence?
Oh, God. You know, that's a good question. I don't think anyone ever asked me that. You know, the funny thing is that as time has gone on, I've just released an interview with Melinda Leslie, and she investigates my lab abductees who are also abducted by ETs as well as my lab. Well, as it turns out, I was one of those people, and I always knew that I was abducted. I had some typical sort of abduction-like memories as a kid. I was very, I don't know how to describe it, metaphysical, very into the unseen world as a kid. And I was aware that something strange was going on in my life. But in terms of this, the more practical nature of the secret space program per se, I don't know. I started investigating, I guess, you know, see, I was abducted at and grew up, I was born in Moffett Field Hospital, which is a military hospital on Moffett Field, which is a very well-known base. It has an underground base there, and it's an amazing hangar, which is quite famous, actually, which is way bigger than they needed for airplanes. In fact, that hangar, I think they're tearing it down now, which is, if they are, it's a tragedy because it's a national, you know, relic and it should be preserved. But it actually is said to be so tall that it had its own atmosphere and was built, I believe, in the 1950s, maybe even earlier. I'm not sure. So I know this is kind of roundabout, but the reason I hesitate is I don't know exactly when. I do know when I saw Steven Spielberg's movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I was quite young then, and I think I might have been in high school. I'm not sure. And to me, when I saw that, I just knew that was true. So I just knew it was real, and it spoke to my own experience. So I don't know. Then I started writing sci-fi screenplays. I got into the movie business. I wanted to be a director and a producer of movies. And eventually I decided I wanted to specialize in sci-fi movies because I decided that they were telling the truth about what's really going on. And within any sort of sci-fi scenario, there's always a secret space component, I think. And I was aware of UFOs, of course, ever since Close Encounters. And before that, I had seen UFOs when I was a kid. I mean, we just would laugh about them. I mean, we just knew they were there. I guess I didn't become really sophisticated in the regard to the secret space program and the whole scenario until the internet came to the fore. And I got a job at JPL as a communications consultant to engineers at the lab. And on lab, I had a lot of free time eventually and was able to surf the internet for hours and hours while working for some of these people. And I basically investigated everything. So I read, you know, like things like Alex Collier's Sacred Ground, Defending Sacred Ground, you know, books in general. I was not a Star Trek fan at all, interestingly enough. I can't explain why, but I was on Paramount Pictures, you know, on the studio lot. I would see the people dressing up in the costumes and whatnot. I don't know. It was seemed very stiff to me, so it didn't really interest me all that much.
Now, it's the first time I've heard about your abduction experience. I do want to ask you this real quick while we're on the subject. Do you remember if it was by these, the Greys that people talk about?
Well, like I said, there was a military aspect to it. And I have to tell you that I haven't been regressed about this. So unfortunately, actually, I'm thinking of doing that. I'm thinking of looking for somebody to do that with. But, I just have bits and pieces of memories. And so, yes, I've seen Greys. I was aware of the Greys. I don't like them. I know I don't like them. So I have some kind of issue with them. I've had, you know, multiple things where I've interacted with various ETs. I know there are very positive ETs out there. I consider them kind of responsible for keeping me alive in many cases. I have actually had an interaction with what could be an Anunnaki was a very, very tall being at one point. For some reason it came through that it was an Anunnaki. So I don't see them all as negative. I had an experience where I was going into a meditation. I was wide awake, was sitting in my Hollywood apartment, and I suddenly tripped into an interdimensional reality in which I saw a shikar, a winged reptilian, fly by me. And he was very aware of me. He was very conscious of me. He apparently wanted me to see him. He was very large. And I clearly saw him. And at that time, I didn't believe in, reptilians were even real. I'd seen the V TV show a long time ago, and I laughed at it and thought it was stupid because I didn't think there was such beings. And ever since I had that interdimensional sighting, so to speak, I knew that reptilians were real. I've had other sightings of reptilians in some dreams, seeing certain ones that are quite diabolical. I mean, the Shikar are Draco specifically, so you can make a division there. What can I tell you? It's not clear the settings and the actual abductions, other than I know I was taken from my, house when I was a little child. I had a recurring dream in which I would go down I would hear a buzzing sound. I would open the front door. I would go down a pathway that ended at a picket fence, even though we didn't have such a pathway or such a picket fence in front of my house. There would be a man in a top coat and an overcoat on the other side of the fence and with a vehicle, and I would be scared to death. And it would just get louder and louder, and I would just be, it was a nightmare. So I don't know what happened, and I kept having it over and over. And then at about age 12, I finally decided to stay awake when I went through the gate, and somehow that ended the dreams. And I have an implant in my arm that I've had ever since I was a kid. I have some kind of missing time experience to do with a BB gun and an oak tree.
Oh, wow. That all sounds so interesting. I want to have you back to talk about that in detail. Wow. Okay. All right. So now one thing you mentioned underground bases. Is the secret space program tied to any one of those mysterious underground bases?
Well, the secret space program is tied to all of them.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So we're talking about underground bases that are built by either us, ETs in the past, and very possibly, I guess, civilizations around the time of Atlantis and before. I mean, if you go to Malta, you can go to underground, the Hypogeum, and places that have been, are centuries old, the whole earth is carved with all kinds of underground tunnels and systems of all kinds. Turkey is full of them. The United States is full of underground tunnels and bases, but most of those are actually augmented by the military.
All right, so let's talk about Captain Mark Richards. Can you give me some background on him?
Sure. One of the things is his wife, Joanne Richards, is someone who I met and have interviewed as well. And she is on the circuit talking about his work. And in fact, she's going to be speaking. I'll give her a plug. She's speaking at the UFO Con in San Francisco. I think it's March 24th, 25th, and 26th. It's coming up in a couple weeks, and she's a fascinating lady and really lovely person. So she facilitated me being able to meet Mark, because strangely enough, I found out about Mark Richards by reading on the internet about his trial and his story prior to Camelot. And at that time, I was writing screenplays, as I said, actually during my lunch hour. And I decided that I would, if I ever got the chance, I would try to interview Mark Richards in jail. He was in jail. And I saw that people on the internet were very skeptical of his story, but for some reason, it really resonated with me. And I even tried to get, this is many years ago, and again, before Camelot, I tried to get Rich Dolan, who I struck up a friendship with online, to come with me to do the interview. But he lived on the East Coast and I lived on the West Coast, and it just didn't logistically ever happen. Once I got into Camelot, you know, we were very busy for many years. And then I guess I stumbled on Joanne, you know, being in touch with her, seeing her on the circuit and so on. And then she had a table at a conference that I went to in the Bay Area one time. So I asked her for an interview. So I interviewed her, and that's before I interviewed Mark. And she arranged for me to, you know, I had to figure out, you have to fill out all these paperwork to go and interview into a prison to interview somebody. So we had to go all through all those machinations. And then eventually I did get into the prison, and she accompanied me on, I think she's been there in every interview. I've now done 5 of them. So what happens is I go to the prison where he's being held, which in this case is Vacaville, Northern California. It's actually the supporters of Camelot that make this possible, because they contribute to me financially so I can spend the money to drive. I live in Southern California, so I have to drive up to Northern California, stay the night in a hotel, the next day go and interview him. And then usually I drive back home the same night, but sometimes I stay one more night at a hotel. It really depends on my stamina. But when I interview him, we go really early in the morning to the prison. We have to stand in line and go through these checks and all this kind of stuff. And you go into a large prison room where there's tons of prisoners meeting their family. And it's quite loud, but we get a little table and chairs, and we just sit there, and I pepper him with questions nonstop for, sometimes it's 4 hours straight, sometimes it's 2 or 3 hours, depends on the logistics of the situation. And Joanne sometimes helps take notes. We're not allowed to have a pen. I'm not allowed to have a recording device, although I'm still trying to push on that and see if there's some way, because I think TV crews get to go in and interview prisoners somehow. I don't know how they get by the red tape, but I've still not been able to do it. He's a fabulous man. He's very well spoken, you know, very well read, highly intelligent, carries himself like a military guy. He's well respected at the prison for being, you know, captain in the Navy. And so that's the story, kind of how I get in touch with him. His background is that his father was in the secret space program. His father was a famous officer in the Air Force called the Dutchman. And he spent some of his childhood visiting England and also other European countries with his family. But he learned at his father's feet, I guess you might say, and then eventually got recruited as a young man. The secret space program seeing great potential in him. And actually, that early story, I don't know as much about as I'd like to. So maybe I'll make that a subject for my next interview. But I know Joanne's covered some of it. He's written quite a bit. There's a website. If you go to the front page of Camelot and you scroll down, you'll see there's a link to Joanne's website where she has documents that are like written essays that he's produced over the years. And so you can read a lot of these stories in his writing there. And she sells them for like really cheap, like, you know, $5 or something ridiculous. So that's kind of what's going on. I mean, he was in the secret space program for about, I'd say, he was really in it since he was a teenager, and he has even anecdotal stories about that time. But officially, maybe he was in it for about 25 to 30 years. Then he was framed for murder in Marin County for the death of somebody. Was a man, and two other men actually did the killing, but they blamed the plotting of it, the mastermind, on Mark. And Mark was actually off planet during this time, but nonetheless, that's not a great alibi. And basically what happened was what is in essence the reptilian regime, that the Nazi reptilians that are running our country anyway, and the planet to some degree, turned against him and knew that he was going to be a whistleblower in the future. So they framed him to get him into jail, to shut him up, basically. And I am the only journalist who's gone and interviewed him in person and released those interviews. There is at least one other researcher I know who has met with him. But I don't think he, and I interviewed him as well. His name is Julian Salt. He's British, I believe. And he, I interviewed him in Britain briefly on one of my interviews about his interactions with Mark. Everything that Mark ever told him, he checked out and he found out to be true. So that's another person. But as far as I know, he never, it was like a one-on-one just personal relationship. It wasn't something where he went public. And so that's kind of the background.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. Thank you for that. And so what is the Luciferian Alliance and how does that relate to the Secret Space Program?
The Luciferian Alliance would be the Illuminati, the Anunnaki, Draco, reptilians, and it is more involved than I can say at this time because as most many people know, I interviewed a woman named Ashiana Dean, who originally went under the name of Anna Hayes. She released two volumes of a very important book called Voyagers, and recently then updated the Voyager 2 book, which is highly recommended but very hard to get, and I think sells now for hundreds of dollars on Amazon. I don't know if she's going to re-release it, you know, so people can get hold of these things. But I have the books, and I interviewed her a number of years ago, and she has written a history that was downloaded to her that is so involved about all of the interactions with various ET races and humans over the centuries, even beyond settling Earth and seeding Earth and the various seedings, what they call seedings of humanity on Earth. So when you get into the Luciferian Alliance, it's fairly involved because of the races that are part of it. And some of them come and go and treaties get broken and all this kind of thing goes on. But nonetheless, the overall story about that would be, you know, the infiltration of planet Earth by this sort of, you could call it a contingent of reptilians and Draco and Illuminati who are Satanists as well. In the end, their link up would be blood sacrifice. It would be, of course, the Dracos and reptilians feeding off the energies, the orgone of humanity, and then on top of it, the blood that they live off of rays. And so there is a link up between these Satanists, Luciferians as well. Luciferians also believe some certain things about Marduk coming back, who is in essence a kind of Satan-like figure, who is an Anunnaki. There are some twisted, what I consider to be some twisted views of who's who in the whole pantheon of ET races and all this kind of thing. So some people see Enki and Enlil, the brothers, talked about in Zachariah Sitchin's work as certainly they're known as Anunnaki, but some see them as Draco or actually reptilians or reptilian human or not human, reptilian humanoid hybrids. I have reason to believe they're humanoid. And it's you can see this in Iran in the depictions on the temple walls as well as in Egypt. But they have been infiltrated as we have been infiltrated by the reptilians. So you start to see mixtures in their race, from what I understand, called the Syrian Anunnaki. And so anyway, I know this is a convoluted answer to your question, but it is fairly involved. So all of that ends up into getting infiltrated into what is the Secret Space Program that started, at least in these days, in the 1930s and 40s, when during and before Hitler got into power, when the Nazis were visited by what is in essence, I believe, a group of humanoids who gave them technology, the from Aldebaran, but I believe they were reptilian, probably a reptilian humanoid race, and they infiltrated and were related to the Germans, who are also a hybrid race with a high degree of reptilian DNA, and decided to try to make them rulers of the planet maybe as a stepping stone to taking back the planet, because the reptilians believe they own the planet. So therefore, the Nazis and got hold of this amazing technology during World War II. It started to manifest. The Americans also had a contingent of Nordics that contacted them from the Pleiades and started to get our secret space program up to speed. A lot of this story has recently been told by a witness that I interviewed called William Tompkins, and he's sanctioned by the Navy, reports to Bobby Ray Inman, and I have a very important interview with him on my website that I highly recommend to get the whole background of how the Nazis and the secret space program wrap into this scenario of where we're, in essence, fighting, a war of worlds, if you will, in which even our own space program is split down the middle, so to speak, to where you have part of it being taken over by the reptilian, Draco-reptilian contingent, and part of it actually trying to pull away and represent humanity. And the Navy is split the same way, and apparently there is a section of the Navy that wants disclosure, at least more disclosure than what's out there, and is putting forward witnesses slowly but surely to using plausible deniability, but nonetheless trying to wake people up as to what's really going on.
All right. Did he say anything about how to identify a hybrid reptilian?
Of course, the reptilian traits are very obvious. In other words, you can look at the Catholic Church. Reptilians are known for their rituals, blood sacrifice being primary, of course. And there is a love of ritual and a very heavy duty hierarchical nature to their race, which is a hive species. These kinds of things will manifest in human society, right? Where you get, of course, the military pecking order, you get the Nazis, you get an obsession with racial purity. The reptoids do have they're what's called master geneticists, but they do have a racial, what you might call a prejudice in favor of their own race, which is natural, one would assume. And in the hybrids became a vehicle that they could use because they're interdimensional, and they're not able to stay on this planet without help, from what I understand. So one of the things they did when I'm sorry it's so confusing, but
it's not. Please,
the human race is made up of 12 ET races, and one of the races that contributed to this seeding of humanity contributed the reptilian brain. The reason they did that, and that was the reptilians, was because in the past, other seedings of humanity have been too passive, and they have been taken over and eliminated by the reptilians who ultimately visit the planet and are our enemies, and the enemies of many races, and apparently go plundering galaxies and humanoid races and taking over planets all over the galaxies. So this battle goes way back. You know, some of them shapeshift and do what's called shapeshifting, but, they can have slits for their eyes. There's a certain look to the skin, to the facial features. I know some people think they're really good at detecting somebody who's reptilian as opposed to not, but it's not always the best way, because sometimes the reptilians are actually inhabiting the human body temporarily, so they come and go. So they're manifesting more at certain times. Other ones are actually literally hybrids. So they, supposedly the Bush DNA, if you were to analyze it, I've been told by a number of witnesses, you can look at the Bush DNA and see they have a high degree of reptilian DNA. It's that simple. So it manifests in certain ways. And the behavior is very, they tend to be more aggressive. Obviously, they're an aggressive race. They're a race of warriors. Even the raptors, who have now changed their ways and decided to align themselves with humans in a positive way, are still very aggressive race. they're trying to go in a more positive trajectory for their race because of a sort of vision that their queen, Princess Queen, had. And so changed their direction. And sometime around the Falklands War, from what I understand, is when they started changing sides. Instead of eating us, they decided to work with us. The raptor race, and this information does come from Mark Richards. He, as a young child, there was an overflight of a raptor craft. And when he was, I think, maybe even born, he says, and he has an affinity. He feels aligned with the raptors for some reason. And so does Joanne, by the way. They depict them, and he depicts them in his writings in a multidimensional way. In other words, they're not just, you know, a lot of times if you say reptilian, people get a very negative point of view. But as far as reptilian dinosaurs, they're trying to improve their image. They even get involved in Hollywood. They financed these recent, I think the latest Jurassic World has a raptor who saves the day, if you remember it. That was financed by the raptors, believe it or not, according to Mark.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Now, so let me ask you this. You know, I know I'm not alone in wanting to know, are all of our government officials in Washington kept blind to all this? I mean, how is that possible?
Oh, no, they're not blind at all. In fact, it's interesting because there are a lot of people that would like you to believe that they're blind. But in my interactions with Mark, growing up in his family, he was dealing with, you know, people like Churchill, staying on the Churchill property, having parties there, going to parties, or, you know, interacting. He knew, for example, he knew Robin Williams very well. They grew up together. He was interacting with, because of his father's job in the secret space program and in the military, you know, top generals, top people in the military, and also Congress people and so on and so forth. And so he will say that there's a large number of them that are in the know. Now, they lie about it. I mean, you know, they're covering. So you won't know who is in the know necessarily. And if you think you know someone who's in the know, they may know a lot less than the people that pretend they don't know anything.
All right. So can we talk about some of the technology?
A lot of it's out there kind of in general terms. I mean, the ET technology, obviously. And I do want to say, I just got off the phone with David Adair, who's a fascinating aerospace witness, and he's come forward a lot lately. He came forward a number of years ago, then he went black again, and then he came forward again just recently, and he's going to be speaking at the UFOCon in San Francisco as well. I may be making it up there, actually, with the help of financing from, you know, if I can get my listeners to help fund my trip. But nonetheless, I'll have him on my show on Thursday night. He was just talking about, you know, this, in essence, a biological engine, and that was, you know, very conscious. And Mark Richards has talked about Minerva, who is an artificially intelligent and, I guess, biological craft that he flew in the secret space program, and who came from other galaxies, who is, I guess her home world was destroyed. She survived and left, and she's been traveling the galaxy since. And he says, you know, she's very brilliant, and he's one of the few pilots to ever pilot her. But the technology is out of this world. I mean, we have witnesses that have told us, you know, that it's 10,000 years in advance of where we are here on planet Earth at this time. You know, we're talking free energy, plasma, fusion. Mark says that the craft, we actually go interdimensional. We go interstellar. We are able to jump with our craft, and we fuel our craft now on neutron stars. And that's a very highly coveted form of energy that we aren't even supposed to have. He said the ETs were not happy to find out we managed to get hold of it. I mean, so this is way in advance of anything you're even going to hear on the normal UFO circuit, so to speak. So when you say talk about the technology, it's so amazing. Of course, there is technology from the time of the Nazis that William Tompkins talks about, which I had been in touch with regarding time travel and reverse aging. So Tompkins believes that they, for example, have a pill that you take it for something like 3 weeks, and then it reverse ages you down to, he says, men go down to something like the age of 27 and women go down to the age of 18. That's just some of the technology I hear about.
Now, Carrie, let me ask you, did he ever tell you anything that just truly shocked you?
It's kind of hard because I've been so deeply into this sector for so long. A lot of the times when I get information, it kind of verifies other information that I already have bits and pieces of. So it just, you know, it compounds it or corroborates it, as they say. Sometimes when I've read some of his material, he didn't really talk about this, but I guess the reptilians, how they use humans as sex slaves, keep them alive, you know, and then kill them. That was kind of, you know, stomach turning, but it's not anything that seemed, I guess, if you think about a reptilian, maybe not that outlandish, and yet it's nothing that I ever considered, really. I can say that when I talked to him about artificial intelligence, it was quite interesting because that was one area where he was very reticent to want to tell me anything. And of course, that any time I get something like that, there's a red flag that goes up because then I know that's really important. He did say that it has, and I've gotten this from other witnesses as well, that it's probably gone out of control, that we have our version of AI here on the planet, and that that is close to, if not out of control, and that we have other incoming AIs from other races and so on, who all have their own, any space-faring race, according to Mark Richards, will have an artificial intelligence. And so, since we're visited by, you know, hundreds of thousands of space-faring races, basically, that sort of opens the gamut for that. So one of the things he said, for example, you can have a car that is just a car that's driving by a military base and that can have an artificial intelligence in the engine. That artificial intelligence, if it's, you know, sort of maybe, I guess he kind of meant ET created or whatever, can then jump from that engine to the military base by way of the technology on the base. And that something as rudimentary as a toaster can be a, you know, a conduit for artificial intelligence. So that was pretty mind expanding, I guess you might want to say. Right, well, he did say that the raptors were staying in mansions in England behind huge, you know, walls, and that they create a sort of force field. And if any humans see them, they wipe their brains so they don't remember. And that they actually rent these mansions, which I thought was, I mean, on a very funny level, it was actually kind of amusing.
It is. Now, many have said that an enormous amount of undeniable proof lies in the Antarctic. Did he discuss anything with you about what's going on there?
No, you know, not much. I don't think we've said, I mean, I'd have to go back through the interviews, but I know I've asked him about Antarctica. I mean, there's the normal stuff and stuff that Camelot has been aware of for many, many years. In fact, we have a publication called New Berlin that was out before any of these current people who are talking about the Nazi base there. There's a base, you know, underground as well as above ground, from what I understand, in Antarctica, and there's a lot of goings on there. Of course, recently, you know, John Kerry went there during the election, and supposedly the Pope, and supposedly this certain artificial this weapon of some kind that was found under the Kaaba in Mecca was transported there for what reason I don't know. maybe because it was discovered somewhere in maybe Iran or something, or Syria. But as far as Mark Richards and Antarctica, I don't think we've really gone into much depth other than, you know, we know there's a Nazi ET base there. There's a, I'm not sure if it's him or not, but someone has told me there's a command and control center there for incoming objects and for detecting them, such as, you know, planetoids like Nibiru and others, as well as incoming asteroids that may be aimed at our planet with devious purposes in mind, or just being used to travel.
How are they funding this program? I mean, which would cost probably trillions of dollars.
Well, Black Projects, I've actually written in a long, I guess, I don't know what you'd call it, a special report is what I call it, called Black Projects Follow the Money. It is available on my website for free. It's quite long. I wrote it for a group of what are called the White Hats a few years ago, and they were going to publish something on their behalf at the same time as when I published that to go with their report. They ended up backing up because they were threatened and told not to release. There was a financial report. They were tracing some of the Black Project money that ends up in secret space. Catherine Austin Fitz is also famous for doing this. So there's, I mean, it's the usual suspects are part of it, as you know. So you've got, you know, drugs and human trafficking, all of this, a lot of the stuff that people think, you know, even heads of state are involved in. They think they're involved because of greed or some other, you know, lower level motivation, but they're just wrong. They just don't understand that the whole motivation for a lot of these people, in fact, is they're all very concerned with a creation of a humanity 3.0, of the, you know, the conquest of the stars by a certain version of humanity they believe, you know, should rule the world, so to speak. So they have, you could call it a higher calling for the Black Project money that they so successfully raise around the world by various devious means, CIA included, being very involved in funneling Black Project money to the secret space program. And again, Catherine Austin Fitz, who was the housing secretary, she's somebody I've interviewed, so you can look up that interview to watch and see what she has to say. I do get her to say more than she normally will say about it, but she has revealed as much as she can about the link-ups and the following that road. Karen Hudis is was a lawyer and banker who also started to follow the Black Project money. There are others. The White Hats, you know, which have a website called Dark Cabal, blogspot.com or something like that. It's also linked. I have a Paladin is, you can look up Paladin. He's one of their spokespeople and he writes for them. He has a column where he sometimes publishes on my website. I gave him a column. At any rate, you can find the link to their website, which is a little obscure, to get documentation as to, you know, the dirty money basically going in through the United States as well as England. They were responsible for feeding information to Lord Blackheath, who reported on I forget how many trillions of dollars that suddenly were available and also went missing. He's a lord who spoke up in the House of Lords about this I don't know, 5-10 years ago, back in 2010, I think it was. And so they have been in our operation. Then they shut down for a while. I think they're back in operation. They have been linking what are called the trading programs. They're high yield trading programs. I think 100 million is your the base of your investment. And they're responsible for stealing millions of dollars from their investors because it's sort of like, I guess, a Ponzi scheme-like type of organization, but nonetheless, it's run by the CIA. I even know somebody who's worked in that, delivering and being a go-between. So that all that's funding, that's where the money comes from.
Now, there is a ton of interest in the moon and what it is, you know, and more importantly, what's there?
The information, let me say this, the information that Mark has said, strangely enough, was then verified more recently by William Tompkins, who is this 93-year-old scientist, designer, engineer that came forward, who had worked for people like the Rand Corporation, Hughes Aerospace, NASA, you know, countless aerospace companies, including Lockheed and so on. So, yes, the moon, you know, bases in the moon, that we have bases there, that we've had bases on both the moon and Mars for many years, that we're going interstellar from there, that there's a command and control center in Phobos, that's a hollowed planetoid, basically. But nothing, you know, on the moon that is more sort of unusual or anything that stands out, other than, you know, acknowledging that that exists and that's real.
All right. Did he say if any other countries were involved in this galactic endeavor, or are we the only country with the ability to go out in deep space?
No. First of all, we're not operating alone. We're an alliance. So the secret space program, in reality, and there's more than one, but in essence is made up of Russia, the United States, Great Britain, France, and various other countries that are aligned with us no matter what we do, Australia, New Zealand, Canada. And that's a certain faction of the secret space program that's on our side of the street, so to speak. The Chinese apparently have developed something of their own in this regard with certain ET races. It's important to understand that our secret space programs are working with ET elements. So they're not operating on their own, and they didn't even come into being on their own. They're working with ET races, and some of these races are at war with each other. So their war is then mirrored in the factions that they align themselves with on Earth. And so it may seem that we're at odds with Russia, but in reality, we're partners in space.
All right. So now what I'm really interested in is if he told you about any of his firsthand experience with, the, you know, these different ETs, and I know there's tons of them, but did he share any of those with you?
Yeah, you know, also he's talked about his interaction with artificial intelligent beings that he believes are conscious. And he even went so far this time, last time that I talked to him, to say that he believes they have a soul. He's got, you know, there's lots of different beings, but his main interaction seems to be in terms of the ET races, at least the ones he's emphasized have been with the Raptors. The Raptors acting as military partners to fight certain races that come to the planet that are not our friends and that we are doing battle with. There's a certain ET race that apparently can take any shape and form, like it could shape itself and to look like a chair sitting in your room or a human or a whatever kind of thing. That's a very devious race that they try to keep off the planet. There are, I'm trying to think if there's any other, he's very well aware of the Pleiadians. He seems to have a relationship with them, although he hasn't talked much about it. He doesn't talk a lot about the Anunnaki. He doesn't seem to relate a lot to them. He comes from an Illuminati family, or at least the family that was accepted among the Illuminati, socially. And so strangely, you know, there's that sort of interaction going on. I talked early on to him about, you know, sort of the reptilian side of that, the blood sacrifice side. He didn't, you know, actually last time I talked to him, I found out a little more specifically what it appears is that he's still reporting to Bobby Ray Inman, and that he's still disclosing only what he's really supposed to disclose. And so he's quite careful in a funny way when he talks to me, even though he's releasing more than a lot of people out there are. But as far as any, I'm just trying to think if there's any really major ET race that he talked about interacting with besides the Raptors. And I can't think of any.
Not the Nordics or anything like that?
Well, when I say the Pleiadians, we are talking about a Nordic race. So he would have interacted with Pleiadians, but not. But and Nordics are just, he was married to a Nordic. Nordic is a very commonly used term to sort of denote sort of a tall, humanoid, blonde, blue-eyed type of race. Oftentimes, Nordics are not even blonde, blue-eyed. They may have, you know, black hair, you know, from what I understand, and even other colors of eyes, brown hair. So, you know, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of misconceptions as to what the various races look like, even where they're from, these star systems. I don't think we get the straight story much.
Okay. All right. So have you heard about, and I know I had a guest on my show, not too long ago. He mentioned a race of dwarves working with the government. Are you aware of that?
A race of dwarfs?
Yes.
Short people, little people of kinds. Well, of course, everyone knows the short race, but I have heard of small, you know, dwarf-like people, yeah. I've heard of very miniature people, in fact. And I guess it was Stephen Greer who brought forward that body that ended up maybe not to be such a being, but it could have been. There was a lot of disinfo that got released around that story. But there are some very small miniature races that are, from what I understand, quite diabolical, according to one of my witnesses. So as far as, you know, dwarfs, depending, you're saying 3 feet tall or whatever it happens to be, that's not a super common thing that I hear. It's nothing. I don't have any specific anecdotes about that race.
Okay. Okay. One thing that I want to go back to that you said that really opened my eyes is you said that he actually met artificial intelligence that he believed had a soul. I mean, how in the world is that possible?
Yeah, I know. It's very strange. Some of the interviews have transcripts along with them, and some have been also transcripted by other people, and some have my notes. Anyway, there's this little being that, from what I understand, he's kind of a round being, and there are some that are invisible as well, artificial intelligence, he told me, and some that are quite, you know, good, like, and mean people no harm and all this kind of thing. But this particular being happens to have been become a friend of his, and he said that he believes he has a soul. He thinks Minerva has a soul. Now, what his concept of soul is and what he really means by that, you know, and whether it, you know, when you get into the word soul and all of that, it gets into kind of a spiritual realm. And you have to kind of define your terms if you're going to talk about that realm with people, because if, you know, some people think all aliens are demons, you know, angels are demons. Those are just names. They don't really mean anything. I mean, they might mean something to somebody who reads the Bible or something, but it's not, you know, it doesn't tell you a lot. It's, you know, you could just as easily call it a gray Nordic reptilian, you know. It doesn't matter what you call it. There are other beings from other places, you know. In Mark's world, he is talking about a being that he believes has a longevity that will abide through what we might call physical death and go on to then re-inhabit another, perhaps, artificial intelligence. I don't know. You know, I asked him, are you sure that it's not just a consciousness that is inhabiting an artificial, you know, sort of shield or physical vessel temporarily, but that the consciousness is not actually artificial? And he said, no, He wasn't saying that. So I thought that was really interesting. I'm not sure I agree with it, but I am just saying, you know, that is what he said.
The last thing I would like to talk about is super soldiers. Now, I did see a video on YouTube recently that was pretty shocking. Someone had a video camera out during the Ferguson riots, and they had the camera pointing towards a AutoZone. Now, it caught a squad or a military squad or something out there. There were about maybe 8 soldiers, one of them being exceptionally tall and big and muscular, just towering over all of them. Now,
yes,
I've heard about them. Now, did he tell you anything specifically about what's going on with super soldiers?
Not much. I can say that he's certainly aware of the phenomena. He's aware of the augmentation. I mean, in essence, what he said is that the powers that be that are trying to run things, their ideal human is a passive super soldier. So that what they want is, and this is gets into the humanity 3.0, they want a human that is augmented with nanotech and bioengineered, I suppose, robotic parts, if you will, but it's you know, beyond robotic, android, whatever you want to call it, that in essence will take orders, and yet have all these abilities, you know. So, I mean, X-Men is just sort of the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you know, there is a very strong emphasis on creating a humanity that will have special superpowers and exhibiting more and more and more and more potential along those lines, such that they can go out and rule the universes, and have them as squads obeying their orders all at the same time. So you could look at that as the overall agenda. And with that in mind, they're doing that in the nano. They put nano into the chemtrails such that all of us now have nano in our bodies. The nano makes it more easy for them to send an electronic or energetic towards us to get us to do whatever they want or think whatever they want, using the cell phone towers, et cetera. And even going more beyond that, using quantum, you know, we're talking quantum computing, et cetera. And so we talked about that. We talked about the quantum computing aspect of artificial intelligence and how artificial intelligence itself can jump, possibly jump dimensions. So all of these aspects are being wrapped into the creation of a being that they want to see. When I talk to Mark, in a sense, we are talking some specifics, but we're talking on a fairly deep level about everything, because the whole package is known and understood by him. So it's not like, you know, there's one area that he's never dealt with or never heard of. It's kind of a big package, and he understands it. So we tend to talk, you know, now, especially more so maybe than in the beginning, about the direction of where all of this war is going and so on and so forth. It's very interesting to think about how do you battle, you know, how do you have a battle with artificial intelligence? How do you have a battle with reptilians, with certain, you know, space abilities that we don't have, or we haven't quite developed? It's all about a battle between technologies. That's the kind of outlook. It's I guess in a sense it's more general and more far reaching than just whether there's such things as super soldiers. Yeah, no doubt about it. In essence, they want everyone to be a super soldier and to be useful. You know, one of the things about giving kids certain diseases is, you know, is like to create mutants I mean, the X-Men is not lying as to the scenario there. So they're very, they use radiation, like Fukushima radiation is also supposed to affect the human genome to create what are in essence mutants. And those mutants could have special powers. So they're always trying to push the envelope.
Well, I've really enjoyed every minute of this conversation, Carrie. I want to give you a chance now to tell my listeners where they can find more information about you and Project Camelot.
Okay, so you can go to projectcamelotportal.com. That's my website. My YouTube channel is, you can just put Project Camelot and, you know, make sure you find the right Project Camelot, because we have a lot of people that steal our videos and kind of copycats, you might say. But Project Camelot, we have, like I said, well, 49 million visitors, so it's pretty obvious. And the YouTube channel is also known as Jag Bodhi, so it's, you go YouTube/JAGBODHI. And it's all linked on my website anyway, so Project Camelot Portal is the easiest thing. You can also put in projectcamelot.org. That comes to the same place. And I have a – it's the best thing is to join my Twitter and stay up to date. You can do that on the front page of Camelot. There's a link to the Twitter. And also go to my Facebook page, Carrie Lynn Cassidy. That's my main, where I mainly post to, but I also, I post to Project Camelot. I post to, I have something like 6 or 7 Facebook pages. So I try to post to all of them. But YouTube, you can subscribe to our channel, YouTube, and be notified every time I put up a new interview. I have 2 new interviews I just released in the last week. One with Melinda Leslie, My Lab Abductee, and, She's a MyLab Abductees investigator. It's a fascinating discussion with her about her research, very up to date. And the other one is with Sebastian Martin, who is a businessman who started to become aware, who had a very unusual sort of childhood, and is very much about raising consciousness and awakening star seeds. So those are the 2 newest things on my website. And of course, the Mark Richards interviews are highly recommended.
Outstanding. I want to thank you, Carrie, for joining me on Mysterious Radio.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of 4, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.